when you're going into this, you have to understand what your capacity is. And then you need to build your team. You need to go in knowing who the adoption and the foster care groups are. Being involved in that system, hearing the good stories and the bad stories, because you need to know what could happen and where you can get help.
Hi, brave friends. Welcome to today's practical episode, episode 170. And our guest today is Janelle Jones, who is quite remarkable. She's an early education entrepreneur, currently operating multiple early learning centers, which specialize in providing high quality learning experiences to children who experience trauma in low-income areas. Her education background includes earning a bachelor's degree in business management and a master's in curriculum and instruction with an emphasis on autism spectrum disorders from Arizona State University. A native of Phoenix, Janelle has provided her expertise to families for the last decade and currently hosts private discussions with other foster and adoptive parents on current issues affecting the non-traditional home. Through her life experiences, passion is the source by which she governs herself to make a difference. The goal is not to be perfect, but to assist others in rising through difficulties. Her blueprint of success can be summed up in a few statements: be tenacious, be kind, be loving, but most of all, be forgiving. Find out more about her at JanelleJones.com and check out her book on Amazon, which, of course, we will link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to today's very, very worthwhile conversation. Hi, Janelle. Welcome to Brave Together podcast. I am so honored to have this time with you today.
Hello. How are you?
I am well. And thank you for your patience and your time and just everything that you're going to share with us today. I so appreciate you. I appreciated you before I even met you, just reading everything. And I just thank you for the work that you're doing in advance and for your big, beautiful heart and 7 children.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So share with our listeners your story, Janelle.
So, you know, I consider myself a normal person. I'm just a mom of a lot of children. Although I do think my children are all extra extraordinary. So my husband and I, we were a family of 6. And then probably where you're coming in is with my daughter, Mercy. We saw this beautiful little girl that needed a home. And so we decided to open up our family because, you know, what's one more when you have 6? I mean, should be fairly simple. And we took one more in, and in lies the story of Mercy.
And Mercy was 8 when she came into your family?
Yes, Mercy was 8 years old, and she was with a family that the church had, and she needed a home. So as many are aware, older children have a harder time getting adopted. And I have fallen in love with her, I think, from the moment I saw her. I kind of have this thing about kids. I really like them for some reason, probably why I have 7. And I like other people's kids. I like, you know, it's weird. But I love children in general. Hence, probably why I do childcare and have businesses that revolve around children. And so I really wanted to do something to help this child and be impactful. So what a better way than becoming her mom?
And tell our listeners, did she have any struggles? Did she have any disabilities or diagnoses or anything that made, besides being an older child, a more complex fostering and adopting situation?
So initially, when Mercy came into our lives, we were told that she was a child that needed guidance, discipline, and structure, which I'm very good at that. I'm very good in working with children. Even my nephew, who was one of my 6, we took him in a little bit older, and that's basically what he needed. And so we are very good at providing that. What we did not know was that she did have learning disabilities, and she came with a lot of hidden behavioral and mental issues. And so really, Shattered talks about the discovery, all the things that were hidden from us, which, interesting enough, the team knew about a lot of her issues. They just, in their minds, thought that if they told us, we wouldn't want to adopt her. So they hid it. And there's a couple problems with that. One, we should have been told because it would have changed the way we cared for her. I think we should be given the information, even if it's painful, even if it's bad, because we need to take that into consideration of who we're bringing into our homes and around the children we already have, right?
Right.
So we weren't given that opportunity, but in addition, a lot of time was wasted. A lot of time where as she's hitting puberty, different therapies and different modalities should have been in place and they weren't. And it's very unfair that we weren't even given the opportunity to make the decision and then have the proper things in place. Because I'm one of those parents that when I parent, my children get all of me. They get all of me and every resource I can figure out. So she had a tutor. She had some therapy. You know, she had basketball practice and dance lessons, but she should have had more intensive services provided. And I didn't know to do that. And it hurt her.
And so tell us and educate us. I mean, how often does this happen? Is this happening all the time with kids who are in the system and the team, as you put it, you know, the team on the side who is sending her out into families or other children into families? Are they just in the habit of withholding information for the fear? I understand the fear that this child will not get taken care of or adopted, and that makes sense, but you're doing the child a huge disservice and the family a huge disservice. So is this common?
This is very common. Unfortunately, it's interesting. When you buy a house, you have to be told about pre-existing conditions. You know, you're going to be told about floods and fires and even if something bad happened in the home.
Right.
But when you adopt children, you're not. Even when you go to a doctor, you know, when you transfer to a new doctor, you go get all your previous medical records and you bring it, because if there's any pre-existing conditions, they need to know how to treat. Even if they're going to do new lab work and new other things, they're still going to look at those prior records. But we're able to adopt children, a lot of children, and they get to decide that they're not going to tell us information. And I think what's also interesting is these people don't even understand basic child development. So they're not really the people that should be determining what you should know and what you don't know, because most of them don't even understand the fundamentals of child development. A lot of my daughter's people, her social workers and things, they don't even have kids. So you're going to leave out key pieces of information because you don't want us to know about the past, but we really need to know about the past, because a lot of these children are experiencing trauma, severe trauma, and we need to be able to acknowledge it. We need to be able to give these children a safe place to process it so they can put it aside and let it go, because ignoring it does not make it go away.
Right, right. Absolutely. And so what types of resources are provided for the things that you do know? Is there anything that the social work team offers, or do they make sure that the family that children are going into have insurance to cover therapies and services and, you know, OT or PT or speech therapy? Or do they help you navigate local agencies or state agencies where you live to properly set up that child?
So I think it depends on the state. So as I'm doing this work and talking to different states, I can speak for my state, right? And honestly, I believe a lot of states are the same way. So when I adopted, I was given insurance until my child turns 18. And so she does have therapy with those options. But here's the thing, the therapy isn't what she needs. She needs more comprehensive. She needs more intense therapy. My child does not need therapy once a week. with a new psychologist or a new counselor. My child needs intense, and she needs, my child has issues books are written about, right? I wrote a book, but she has severe trauma. And I think one of the things that's happening also, and it's just, this is my own personal opinion, I think some of the trauma that these children are experiencing, it can't even be classified as severe trauma. I actually think that there should be a new diagnosis for some of these children that are coming out of these systems because the trauma and the abuse are so severe. And what happens when the therapy that they're given isn't enough? And the state level insurance is only going to go so far. So my daughter is blessed to have private insurance. Like, my family had private insurance, and so she's on it. So she's got two layers. But even in that, it's still not enough. Like, my child has been in a few residential treatment centers. Finding ones that will take her and that really do what they need to do has really become a challenge also. So, you know, I'm not trying to discourage adoption or fostering of kids because these children need us, but we do have to do something as a society to make sure these children have what they need, because this is a problem that's coming to knock on all of our doors because they're out here and the problem is getting bigger and we're not dealing with it properly.
And if there was one change that you could implement to make this, what's one thing that you would change, Janelle?
Ooh, one? Only one?
Well, no. We're going to just start with one. I'm sure there are 20. Where would you begin?
I think I'm going to say transparency, because okay, we have to be transparent and have the real conversations. Because if we can't identify the problem, then how can we find a solution? So we have to be open and honest, even in painful situations, because it's not pleasant. These are topics that make everybody want to go away. You know, when I go to talking about my child to other people, you see everybody squirm and get real uncomfortable. And it's like, yeah, we got to sit through the ick. We got to talk about the ick to get past it. Because if me and you can talk about it, maybe you can give me something that's going to help. But if we don't even have the conversation, we can never get anywhere.
And do you find that there are adequate support groups that not just, you know, where you can just share your story, but lead you to true resources?
You know, I think we're getting there. I think there's becoming more and more, but really the support groups are based on the people that are in them. So it's the people that are doing the work, the ones that aren't afraid to talk and that are looking for the resources. And then we come back and we share, this is what's working for me. This is what hasn't worked for me, you know, and that's what makes a support group valuable. One of the support groups that I'm in, the founder of it, she's huge at even being involved with the legislature and bringing things forward and finding people in the government, the policy writers, to make the changes. But she had to go through and figure out this wasn't working on this level. She had to keep climbing. And because she kept climbing, she's actually making an impact now where it needs to be made. And so that's the thing. We have to build this community so we can go forward. And then we have to support each other because it's difficult. You get beat down and, you know, we're all battling with our mommy hearts, right? There's a lot of guilt and things that we did wrong and, you know, we're beating ourselves up. And if you don't have that support system, you don't get very far.
Mm-hmm. And how have you taken care of your own mental health in the midst of all of this and all the caregiving and all the moving and shaking and the work that you're doing, Janelle? How are you taking time for yourself? I don't mean that in like, are you getting your nails done? I just mean like, how are you investing in your own mental health in the midst of all that you are doing?
You know, it's interesting to have a really transparent conversation. I neglected myself for so long. One day I just crashed, right? So I had to go back. I had to get my own trauma therapist, because if you're a mom or a dad that's dealing with a child that has experienced severe trauma, you're going to have trauma issues too. You know, just being there for that child causes trauma. So I've had to buy into the system. I have my own trauma therapist, you know, and I've had to learn how to shut it down and be more realistic to me and what I can do, and understand that this is a lot. You know, for a while I tried to just, you know, put on the smile and keep on going, but I found myself crashing. And so it's vital, that self-care, that tucking away, that feeding your soul, I had to do it too. And it's weird for me. For me, like, you know, I'm the type of person that would tell you to do it, but I wouldn't do it. But I had to start taking my own medicine because I wasn't going to make it.
I so appreciate you sharing that. Thank you so, so much. What do you feel is most important for parents who are considering fostering or fostering to adopt? What do you wish somebody said to you before you began your journey?
You know, I always knew that it wasn't going to be easy. I'm not a person that subscribes to easy anyway, right? So I think the first thing I want to let people know is it's not easy, but it's worth it, you know? And the impact that my daughter, that Mercy receives, my story is not, it's a hard read. If you read that book, it's rough, right? But to know that I made a difference in her life and the lives of other children just like her. And I think that that's what people need to know, why they're doing this. This is for the betterment of children. And I think that we have to know why we're doing this. And this is for children. This is for their betterment and for their future. I think the other thing that parents have to take in with them is know your capacity and know what you can take. Because you may not be in it for an older child. You may have to take a younger child, you know, because older children may come with a lot more baggage. And you may not have the capacity of older children, you know, just like school teachers. Some teachers love those kindergartners and some love those high schoolers. You know, I don't understand. I don't understand the brain power they have and the patience and the love. And mind you, I work with kids, but I love preschoolers, right? And some people are like, whoa, they're bouncing off the wall, but I love that energy. So I think you have to, when you're going into this, you have to understand what your capacity is. And then you need to build your team. You need to go in with the resource, knowing who the adoption and the foster care groups are. Being involved in that system, hearing the good stories and the bad stories, because you need to know what could happen and where you can get help. One of the hardest things I think is being shocked for me about situations like, whoa, that came out of left field, and then trying to juggle to find the resources. So you really want to educate yourself before.
So you're talking about having the capacity, make sure you have the capacity, know what you're getting into as much as you can. So what about the parents who, like you, you're not told everything, and maybe even if you are told everything, you're like, yes, I can do this. Yes, we're going to do this. We're prepared as much as we can be. And there are still things that come from left field, and then you're questioning your capacity. What advice would you give those parents who are like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Oh my gosh, I can't do this.
You know, I think when you find yourself in that situation of I can't do this, or whoa, this is a lot, sometimes we have to look back at those children we fell in love with, you know, and we have to try to just make it a little bit further. We have to just try to stand in the gap, because that's what we do as parents. You know, that's what we do. We have to stand and we have to fight for them, because one of the problems with what we have going on with these children is they don't have any advocates. They don't have anybody standing in the gap, anybody fighting for them. And that's what we have to do. We have to try to make those connections with those children, and we have to fight with them. And they have to know that we're going to be there in the good and the bad. And there is bad. And unfortunately, we have to expect it, that there's bad. I'm hoping that, you know, people don't have to face the bad, but we have to know that it may come. And if it comes, we're going to stand up to it.
Do you think most adoptive parents truly realize how much they're going to have to advocate for this child or these children that they're adopting? Do you think there might be a lot of bleeding hearts with good intentions and big, beautiful hearts, but they're not realizing that there is a fight ahead of them?
You know what? I don't think people realize it. You know, I was in Memphis about a week and a half ago. There's been an update on my book, and it was being featured at this conference. And it was like 45,000 people there. And so I'm doing book signings, and some people were asking me about my book. And if there was one theme that was present with so many people, people I wouldn't have even realized. And I'm not trying to like stereotype people or anything, but like the 6'7" guy, you know, the big 6'7" guy that looks at me with tears in his eyes when I tell him my story and it's like, yeah, that impacted me too. This impacts so many people, and we just don't even understand how people have just stuffed what's happened and won't talk about it. I think this is a topic that reaches far and wide, and people know, but we're just not going to say anything about it because nobody wants to open that can of worms, and we have to.
Yeah, so that people are going into these adoptions or fostering with eyes wide open so that they really, really understand what they're taking on. And it's not just we're adding to our family and we're going to have a bigger family. And now we have a daughter, now we have a son, or now we have twins, or whatever it may be, that there's so much more that they are bringing into their home.
Yeah. And I feel that like if we talked about what's happening in this community with these children more, things wouldn't happen as bad. You know, it's like, I really have felt the reason why the abuse and the trauma that is allowed to happen to the children, I get when these children are with their biological parents before they get removed, things outside of our control happens. That's why they end up in the system. But the fact of the matter is a lot of things happen once they get into the system. And we all know about it, right? We've all heard about it, but we don't talk about it. But who talks about it and who changes it? Because the children can't. They're children. They don't have, some of them can't read and write. They don't have the capacity, and they don't have it. But because we don't talk about it, it's allowed to continue to happen. And that's the thing. That's the charge. We have to stop it. And we're only going to stop it if we have these real, honest, and true conversations.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this out into the light so that we can have more conversations, and that hopefully it's a catalyst for more parents speaking up. And even on the side of the system, let's hope that some people, some social workers or whoever is working on the side of the system, you know, start speaking up and are moved to make changes. And it probably feels incredibly daunting. Any area of culture, society, systems that we need to change, it feels very, very daunting. But let's not let that deter us from speaking up or taking small steps and working together to do something to change it.
Yes.
And you're doing that. Is there anything that you haven't said about your book? Or let's definitely tell people where they can find you, Janelle, but is there anything you're like, I've got to say this before I go? I always make sure I say this.
You know, I just want to say to everybody, if you want to adopt or foster a child, please do. Our community needs you. Just make sure that you're doing it for the right reason. And also make sure that you're finding the resources and the help that you need. And I love to be a resource. You can find my book. You can find me at my website, JanelleJones.com. My book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you read it, please contact me and let me know what you think. We are trying to build this community and make things better for these children.
Thank you so much. It's really, I am so honored to meet you. And I thank you so, so much, Janelle, for all that you're doing. And I'll be buying multiple books and handing those out. So absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciated the interview. So it's been great.
You are so welcome. Take good care.
Thanks so much for listening today. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more. moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization called We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms by offering support groups that are virtual and in person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood await you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only and is not a substitute and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast linked in our show notes or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.